Blog Talk Radio.
Bulletin from Captain Jim Holder. It is my honor to formally release the news on behalf of the REPA Board of Directors that they have unanimously voted to induct Captain Neil Holland into the REPA Hall of Fame in admiration and respect for his extraordinary contributions and commitment to the Eastern family. This honor is to occur at the REPA Convention Banquet on Thursday evening, September 6, 2018, at the Francis Marion Hotel in Charleston, South Carolina. On behalf of all of us at the EAL Radio Show, we wish you, Captain Neil, our warmest congratulations and best wishes. We also wish to thank REPA for honoring Captain Neil and thank them from the bottom of our hearts for giving us the privilege to announce this honor tonight on the EAL Radio Show and for giving this recognition to such a well-deserving Eastern pilot, Captain Neil.
Hey.
How about a hand of applause, everyone?
Applause.
Well, we'll carry it to the end of the show. Thank you so much, REPA. Jerry and the Jim Holder both are with us tonight. Thank you so much. And I totally did not expect anything like this, and we'll talk about it at the end of the show. Thank you so much. And Dorothy, continue with your breaking news. Thank you.
I will do that. Thank you so much, Neil. Breaking news number one, Dynamic International Airways to rebrand as Eastern Airlines by CH Aviation News. Dynamic International Airways in Greensboro has announced it has exited Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection as of March 8th and is now seeking to develop its ACMI charter business using the Eastern Airlines Greensboro brand. Dynamic said in a disclosure to the U.S. Department of Transportation, that's the DOT, that under its court-approved reorganization plan, it will continue to operate the ACMI-type charter flights in a bid to rebuild its financial resources. It said that during its time in bankruptcy protection, it had seen substantial unmet public market need for carriers with wide-body convertible aircraft. As such, it requires DOT approval to increase it beyond the current limit of 5 large aircraft to 10. Dynamic has the infrastructure to operate 10 aircraft and has a strong FAA compliance record, it said. The current 5 aircraft restriction significantly limits financial growth and leads to costly inefficiencies in its maintenance department. The carrier highlighted that it already has customer commitments for the use of up to 10 aircraft, of which 8 will be used for passenger flights and 2 for cargo. The long-term objective, Dynamic said, is to introduce long-haul, low-fare, scheduled service from China and other markets. As it stands, the airline said it would be submitting requests to register the trade name DBA of Eastern Airlines. It is recalled that Eastern Airlines in 2009, EAL Miami International, was absorbed into Arizona-based passenger charter specialist Swift Air USA, WQ Phoenix Sky Harbor last year. However, access to the Eastern Airlines branding rights will come by virtue of owner Kenneth Woolley, who, in addition to owning 100% of Solitude Strategies, LLC, Dynamic single shareholder, also controls the 38.75% stake in Swift Air. All aircraft Dynamic currently operates 1B767-200, 2 ERs, and 2 B767-300ERs are dry leased from various LLCs owned by Woolley. However, the disclosure states that Woolley will be donating these leased aircraft to Dynamic in the near future, such that Dynamic will own its entire B767 fleet. In addition to the leased aircraft and pending department approval of Dynamic's request in this letter, Mr. Woolley is prepared to donate additional Boeing 767 aircraft to Dynamic, it said. In total, Woolley has provided over US$8 million in DIP financing and more than US$50 million in aircraft and cash following the company's emergence from Chapter 11. He is reportedly prepared to invest up to an additional US$15 million to cover any operating expense if needed as a new aircraft is integrated into the fleet. We have more on the newsletter Eastern Swift Dynamic, and we have Facebook comments that are now under members roster of Facebook comments. Over to you, Linda.
Well, I just have to say I am so excited about the recognition to honor our Captain Neil. And breaking news number two, the Berlin aircraft 70th anniversary. This is the year to remember the name Dale Halverson, and this is written by Paul Bertarelli. Dale Halverson in 1948. Some readers will instantly recognize that name, and some will draw blanks. Which are you? In 1948, Dale Halverson was 27 years old. He was prematurely balding, an Air Force transport pilot, and he gained overnight fame as the beloved Sandy Bomber during the Berlin airlift. He got the children so excited dropping candy down to them. And at age 97, Halverson is still with us. And this year, Mr. Paul Bertarelli writes, the 70th anniversary of the Berlin airlift, he says, he suspects you'll be hearing a lot more about Mr. Halverson and the airlift. He's going to use his blog space to get us thinking about it because of the many things the airlift represented. It was inarguably a moment in which the airplane indelibly bent the arc of history, and a lowly first lieutenant, Halverson, he was just a minor cog in a big wheel, but his impact was huge. See more in newsletter online January to June 2018.
Breaking news number three, head up. Technology needed for emerging airlines in the next decade by Airways Magazine. Evolving with technology advancements should be at the forefront of strategic planning and development for an industry leader. For aviation specifically, it is imperative to stay on top of the trends forecast and be prepared to adapt to the needs of the customers as they become more dependent on technology. According to an analysis by the World Economic Forum, our next decade digitalization in aviation, travel, and tourism is predicted to create over $305 billion of value for the industry to increase profitability. $100 billion of that is expected to migrate from traditional players to newcomers. Looking back over the last 15 years, few would have predicted the devices and technology that have become emerging in our daily lives and habits. You can see more of this in our newsletters, January to June 2018.
Chuck, before you begin, Chuck, I just want to mention that that article was written by Ed Weigel of World Airways, and it was written to Airways magazine. Go ahead, Chuck.
Breaking news number 4. AOPA Aviation Curriculum Free to Teachers by Mary Onion. ALPA has developed a curriculum for ninth grade students that uses aviation to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. It is offering it free to school teachers. Teachers will be introduced to the program through a professional development workshop offered in June 26th to 28th, which can be attended at ALPA's headquarters in Frederick, Maryland, or taken online. The course has been tested with more than 700 students and nearly 30 schools over the last year. ALPA says the program includes lesson plans, preparation, assignments, student activities, other learning experiences. The deadline for applying to use the aviation STEM curriculum during the 2018-19 school year is April 19th. See more newsletter, June 2018.
Chuck, I've got a correction on that breaking news. Instead of ALPA, it is...
I'm sorry, what was it? I think we lost him.
Well, hello, Eastern family. It's great having you with us. My name is Jim Hart. Along with our other host, we want to welcome and thank you for listening and calling into the show. You've made us really the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. We love to hear your comments and share your memories with radio listeners from around the world. I don't know if you realize that we're heard in 48 countries. Can you imagine that? If you haven't called the show before, all you have to do is to call 213-816-1611 and just say hi or hola or buenos dias, como esta, bonjour, and talk with us any way you want to, on the air, live. We love to see if you can find us. You know, we can identify many countries around the world who listen in with our Blog Talk Radio application. Isn't it great that we can keep the Eastern legacy going out to not only Eastern family, but to listeners from many countries? And that's what we try to do every week on the EAL radio show. What you try to do, whoop, gotta take a page here. Our thanks also to those who choose to listen by computer using the radio icon on our homepage at www.ealradioshow.com, or perhaps by signing in to our site on our provider, Blog Talk Radio, at www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. Should you too wish to talk during our live broadcast, feel free, please, to call our number during the live broadcast. It's 213-816-1611 at 7 p.m. on Monday evening. Let me repeat that number so you can write it down. to your Monday night visits. It's 813-213-813-1611. Our lines are always open for calls, and if you choose not to participate and talk live with our host, we ask that you please mute your telephone because our producer's board does not have any way or capability to mute any background noises. Now, Mr. Producer, Neil, let's go with flight number 357. Gotta be a jet. Can't be a Martin 404.
Yep, scramble. Let's not keep them waiting.
At the Eastern Air Shuttle, we have a crew on standby whose sole mission is to fly you to Boston or Washington whenever one of our regular shuttle planes is full. And for that reason, we at the Eastern Air Shuttle Service can guarantee you something no other airline can. A seat. The Eastern Air Shuttle, a guaranteed seat without a reservation.
Like they say on that television show, we...
You'll never believe the inside secrets of the airline that Donald Trump once owned. But first, let's look at how and who came up with the shuttle idea. George Jen, you flew the Eastern Shuttle. Can you tell us a little bit about what you flew and what you knew?
Sure, I can do that, Don. Eastern Airlines Shuttle, or the Eastern Shuttle as it was more commonly known, was the brand name of Eastern's air shuttle. It began operations on April 30th, 1961. The shuttle originally flew between New York City, Boston, Washington, D.C., and Newark. The shuttle became part of the fabric of the business and government travel in the United States Northeast Corridor. No reservations were needed. Passengers just showed up at the terminal, could pay on board, and if a plane was full, another plane was rolled out, or sometimes if the passenger wanted, they would be comped on the next regular shuttle to keep that extra plane from being rolled out. The shuttle slogan was, "Imagine life without us." It was ultimately sold in 1988, and with it went its soul. In its present incarnation, it's known as the American Airlines Shuttle. On April 30th, 1961, Eastern inaugurated the Eastern Airlines Shuttle. Initially, it was serviced by 95 and 96-seat Lockheed Super Connies, and it left LaGuardia every 2 hours from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. and flew to Washington National Airport and to Boston's Logan Airport. The shuttle flights soon became hourly from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. out of each city. Reservations were not needed. Seat assignments were not given, and initially no check-in was required, and no boarding passes were issued. But Eastern guaranteed everyone a seat. If the flight was filled, another aircraft was ready to go. For example, on Sunday after Thanksgiving in 1961, the 10 p.m. shuttle between LaGuardia and Boston carried 623 passengers on seven different aircraft. I'd like to add to this my personal thoughts of the shuttle and what the crews thought of this airline within an airline. One of the most popular aspects of the shuttle was the fares. They were El Cheapos, meaning just about anyone could afford to fly on them. If my memory serves me correctly, when I began flying the shuttle on a 727 in 1971, the fare was $24 to Boston and $29 to Washington. And it was really popular with all the college kids. Another thing you might not remember is that Eastern also flew the hourly shuttle from Newark to both places, that is, to Washington and to Boston. There was also a LaGuardia to Montreal and LaGuardia to Buffalo shuttle, but they phased out both of these after the Arab fuel embargo. Eastern also attempted to operate, Oh, and one other thing. Aside from flying the shuttle with Connie's, Electra's, DC-9s, and 727s, we also flew it from LaGuardia to Boston with the Airbus A300. If you recall, these were the planes Eastern got from Iran Airlines and were dubbed at Eastern the Ayatollah A300s. They had all coach seats and no first class. I think they held about 275 passengers. I also flew or sat a lot on shuttle standby, meaning if needed, we flew the extra section. We didn't normally do much flying on that, except around the holidays, so it was a great opportunity to do all your approach plate revisions and get paid for doing them. I even used to run it to many friends, neighbors, old high school buddies, and a large number of famous folks from many walks of life while flying the shuttle. To put all of this into perhaps plainer language, the shuttle was Eastern Airlines personified. Neil? I think Neil muted his own mic.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, let me go ahead and go this. That's good, George. Thank you. Well, probably most of you, most successful innovation in airline operations and marketing, won't you say that, Jim Hart? You were around in the early days of the shuttle. Was it hard to sell the traveling public and the traveling businessman? Jim?
We lost Jim Hart, too.
They're going like flies.
Yeah, they're dropping like the shuttle when it went to Trump.
Keep on going, Don.
Yeah, let me go ahead and let's take a look at the Trump's concept and see how it worked out. Was it successful or did it crash and burn? Jim Holler, how about giving us some of the Trump ideas for the shuttle?
Well, thank you, Don. The Trump shuttle was an airline owned by Donald Trump from 1989 to 1992. The landing rights and some of the physical assets necessary to operate the shuttle flight were originally, of course, part of Eastern Airlines, and known as the Eastern Airlines Shuttle, or simply the Shuttle, as George said. It operated hourly flights on Boeing 727 aircraft from LaGuardia in New York City to Logan International in Boston and Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport, then known as Washington National Airport, as well as charter service to other destinations. Several different aircrafts over the life of the Eastern ownership, as I recall, and George and everyone else does, were the Connie, the Electra, the DC-9, the 727, and as George said, the A300. In the late 1980s, both Eastern Airlines and Pan American World Airways, operated air shuttle services in the northeastern United States, and they were highly profitable, even though the two airlines, as a whole, were not. As the financial outlook for Eastern became more pessimistic in the late 1980s, under the leadership of Frank Lorenzo, the carrier began to sell its routes and aircraft. It organized its profitable shuttle operation into a separate company headed by Bruce Nobles, who I never heard of, with the intent of selling it to raise cash. Frank Lorenzo supposedly met Donald Trump at a party and subsequently negotiated the sale of the shuttle to Trump for $365 million, more than the projected cost to start up a similar airline, but justifiable if the airline achieved a high market share. The shuttle had previously been a no-frills operation for business travel, but Trump announced that he was going to convert it into a luxury airline. After reaching an agreement with Trump in October 1988, Eastern, the Lorenzo Eastern, later filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Many passengers switched to the competing Pan Am shuttle, and the previously profitable Eastern shuttle began losing money. Trump attempted to use the situation to negotiate a lower price and to acquire additional aircraft from Eastern. America West Airlines submitted a more attractive competing offer on May 10th, but failed and its financing was not in place. Trump's offer was approved by the bankruptcy court in May of 1989. June of 1989, the deal was completed, financed through a loan from a syndicate of banks led by Citibank. Trump's whole plan was to create an in-flight experience that mirrored his hotels and casino. He wanted to include such design elements as his signature, gold, marble, and plush. Not everyone he was working with at the time was on board with the idea, but Trump proceeded with his vision. An argument at the time which fell on deaf ears was no one was going to fly on airplanes because they looked better. He disagreed because his modus operandi was to make things look flashier than anyone else, said Shuttle's former president, this Bruce R. Noble guy again. The marble sinks Trump wanted were too heavy for the aircraft. We carried some pretty heavy loads on the 727. I think they could carry a sink. They ended up installing false marble, that stands for fake. The thick burgundy carpets Trump selected made it difficult for the flight attendants to maneuver the food and beverage carts. Trump's solution? He told them just to push harder.
Mr. Narrator, Don, I'd like to apologize for the interruption during my part from George's rendering of what he remembered about the Trump shuttle. We had an electrical strike here and knocked me off the air. So I'm back with you now. I don't know whether you guys enjoy that or not, my voice, but at any rate, would you carry on? And thanks so much for doing what you were able to do without the producer being here. So
we'll stay away from those high-tension lines.
We've got a major thunderstorm, and I might be wiped out again before this is all over. But you guys carry on. It sounds like you're having fun. Linda Fuller?
Yeah, Neil.
George, go ahead.
Out of your chair. Did you get knocked off the air or out of your chair?
Yeah. Well, it takes a little bit more than – well, at any rate, I'll leave it at that. But, this is a great radio broadcast about the Eastern Trump shuttle, and we want to hear more. And Linda, how about telling us more?
Okay. Well, Captain Jim Holder, Bruce Nobles, he was onto something when he tried to tell Trump people wouldn't fly with an airline just because it looked better, despite surveys that said flight passengers, they primarily care about on-time flights and consistent scheduling when it came to flying. But Trump, he still pushed for the luxury experience above all else. He insisted on leather seats, gold-plated fixtures, chrome buckles for flights that took less than an hour, and that was according to the Washington Post. It turned out decking your aircraft out in gold and leather can add up costly pretty quickly. So Trump tried to cut costs in other areas. According to the Washington Post, he even suggested reducing the cockpit crew. He was, of course, reminded that the Federal Aviation Administration said that each flight is required to have a pilot, co-pilot, and an engineer. When Trump Shuttle realized they'd overpaid $65 million for operational costs, they thought they could get some of that money back if they could win 60% of Can-Am's market share. So Trump announced that Can-Am was losing money and Pan-Am could not afford to safely maintain its fleet. Well, Henry Harvevelt, the company's marketing director, according to the Globe, said, Donald, don't ever do that again. It was wrong. We had no proof to back that up. And there is an unwritten rule in the airline business that you do not attack someone else's safety record. Well, not soon after Trump went to Pan-Am, karma caught up with him. In August 1989, a Trump shuttle Boeing 727 performed a crash landing because of a malfunctioning nose gear. The plane needed to dump some of its fuel to avoid an even bigger disaster, and the underbelly of the jet was completely destroyed thanks to a jolting asphalt landing. It was the most beautiful landing you've ever seen, Trump said, according to the Post. Shortly after that, Pan-Am launched an ad campaign, and they used the Monopoly Games character Milburn Pennybags, asking the question, on which shuttle will you find the world's most famous investor in real estate, hotels, and transportation? Despite overspending on his fleet's interiors and the crash and the bad blood he created with Pan Am and their customers, Trump blames a market turndown, rising jet fuel prices for his failed venture. U.S. Air took over the operation, and Trump was no longer responsible for some of the $245 million in loans left and $100 million of the $135 million that Trump personally guaranteed. It was forgiven, reported the Post. I got out at a good time. I walked away saying, I'm smart. The market had crashed. I didn't lose anything. It was a good thing, said Trump in a Globe interview.
You know, there were some changes made that made sense, and they're still around today with some of the airlines. Chuck, can you give us a rundown on some of these ideas?
Well, let's back up and talk a little about some of those ideas that would put the plane under Trump's ownership. The new Trump shuttle operation launched on June 8, 1989, and by the end of August had returned to a strong market share of between 40 and 50%. Trump pushed to make the new shuttle a luxury service and a marketing vehicle for the Trump name. Its aircraft were newly painted in the white livery, and the interior redecoration with such features as maple wood veneer, chrome seatbelt glasses, gold-colored laboratory fixtures. The airline also was a leader in the adoption of advanced technology. It introduced some of the first passenger self-service check-in notice and the coordination with Connects in LaGuardia-based and partnered with Lapstop, a startup firm which rented laptop computers to passengers. The airline also is an early adapter of the GTE Airphone in-flight telephone service. Flight offered free meals, including chicken and steak on some flights, and, well, complimentary champagne and a beer and wine. Boy, this is sounding good. Both Trump and Pan Am spent millions on advertising campaigns, and around this time it was an attempt to maintain a strong competitive position. Of course, they're going broke doing it. Meanwhile, passenger traffic on the shuttle declined. In late 1989, U.S. Northwest entered an economic recession with depressed demand, while August 1990, the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait caused fuel prices to double. While the cost of running an airline rose, many of the corporate customers using the shuttle were cutting travel budgets. Trump's casino business was simultaneously encountering serious difficulties, and Trump was forced to create control over to several business holdings to his bankers in June in 1990 in order to avoid personal bankruptcy. The airline ran out of cash and defaulted on his debt in September 1990. Trump Shuttle conducted some charter operations around this time to minimize the shuttle's spare aircraft. In June 1990, the airline carried Mandela on his 8-city tour of the United States. During the Gulf War, 1990-91, the airline received a government contract to ferry U.S. military personnel between the key domestic bases of Dover Air Force Base, Charleston Air Force Base, Travis Air Force Base, and McCord Air Force Base, and Kelly Air Force Base. During the 2016 presidential campaign, Sean Hannity reported that the Trump campaign confirmed that Trump had set his own aircraft to ferry troops to the war, apparently referring to these charter operations.
Wow. Jay Oakley, things are starting to unravel for the Trump idea of an air shuttle.
That's right, Don. Trump had personally guaranteed $135 million of the shuttle's debt. Following the default, Citibank made arrangements for Northwest Airlines to take control of the shuttle in exchange for relieving Trump's personal liability on its debt, and all sides were reportedly close to an agreement by April 1991. Delta Airlines agreed to buy the competing Pan Am shuttle in July, Pan Am having gone under in the previous December. or actually in December of 91. And Northwest announced that its acquisition of the Trump shuttle was canceled in August, reportedly due to the Trump shuttle's unions demanding parity with Northwest employees and Trump refusing to discount the price to reflect this. US Air ultimately reached an agreement in December 1991 to take operational control of Trump shuttle for up to 10 years with an option to buy it after 5 years. On April 7, 1992, Trump Shuttle ceased to exist when it was merged into a new corporation, Shuttle Inc., which began operating as the U.S. Air Shuttle on April 12, 1992. U.S. Airways subsequently purchased the remainder of Shuttle Inc. on November 19, 1997, and the shuttle subsequently operated under the name U.S. Airways Shuttle. Shuttle Inc. remained as a subsidiary of U.S. Air Group until July 1, 2000, when it was merged into U.S. Airways. In October 2015, U.S. Airways merged with American Airlines, at which point the shuttle became the American Airlines Shuttle. A sister airline, Trump Air, operated a scheduled helicopter service between LaGuardia Airport and Wall Street Heliport to provide connections with Trump Shuttle flights at LaGuardia. Trump Air also operated between New York City and East Hampton Airport from 1989 to 1992 and between the West 30th Street Heliport in Manhattan, Steeplechase Pier in Atlantic City to serve Trump's casinos. The airline used a combination of Sikorsky S-61s and Boeing Chinook helicopters. Some additional notes about the shuttle we can tell our listeners are: when Donald Trump's new airline, the Trump Shuttle, launched on a summer day in 1989, tuxedoed waiters with white gloves passed out smoked salmon, honey chicken skewers, and chocolate truffles. It was early in the day, but champagne flowed at Boston's Logan Airport. And then I guess the flight attendants had the fun of trying to serve a steak meal to 125 people. After a string quartet rested its bows, Trump took the microphone and struck a discordant note. He railed against Pan Am, his rival in the shuttle business. He suggested Pan Am's flights were unsafe, that the company was strapped for cash and couldn't spend as much to maintain planes as Trump Shuttle. "I'm not criticizing Pan Am," Trump said that day. "I'm just speaking facts." Executives at Trump's newest venture were aghast. In a highly competitive business, one in which Trump had zero experience, the new boss had tossed decorum to the wind and made claims he had no evidence to support. "We said, 'Donald, don't ever do that again,'" recalled Henry Hartvelt, who was the company's marketing director. "It was wrong. We had no proof to back that up, and there's an unwritten rule in the airline business that you don't attack someone else's safety record. There, but for the grace of God, go I." Just wanted to add to that something ironic, and that is that the Eastern Shuttle went to Trump and went to U.S. Airways. And then ultimately now it's the American Shuttle. And the ironic thing about that is that in the 1960s, the biggest competition Eastern faced was an effort by American called Jet Express, where they were flying BAC-111s hourly on the shuttle routes. But they never had the backup offer, and they didn't have the self-ticketing. And after a few years, they gave up after being thoroughly trounced by the Eastern Shuttle, which really didn't lose much market share to them at all. And now, 50-some-odd years later, it's the American Airlines Shuttle. So there's some irony for you folks.
Thank you.
Hey, Dorothy, how did Trump's MO carry forward after he got out of the airline business?
Well, Don, echoes of Trump's shuttle reverberate in the Trump presidential campaign. He bashed his rivals with scant justification, grabbed media attention with flash and dazzle, and relied on gut instinct to pursue strategies that flouted industry norms. But while Trump broke into the shuttle business with typical bravado and brand mastery, he was brought low by a series of missteps in a softening economy. His lack of expertise in East Coast skies took a toll, and he was forced to give up the airline after less than 3 years. And Trump's unfounded remarks about Pan Am safety, well, they almost immediately came back to bite him. Trump's own airline was struck by a near tragedy within its first 3 months when the nose gear failed on one of his jets and forced a crash landing at Logan, as we mentioned above. Despite his short, rocky life, Trump today blames outside forces for its demise and maintains the Trump shuttle was a qualified success. It was a great experience. I enjoyed it, Trump said in an interview. It was incredibly well financed. That was the days when where banks put up more than 100% of financing. I ran it really well, he added, but the market collapsed. The whole thing collapsed. For airlines, real estate, everything, it was the depression. Oh, well.
Hey, Jim Holder, how did Trump take over Eastern's very successful shuttle?
Well, Don, it all began when Frank Lorenzo was at a party at the Metropolitan Museum in New York, and he spotted Donald Trump. Lorenzo's airline was struggling and needed an infusion of cash. The company's decades-old shuttle, which transported white-collar businessmen and women between Boston, New York, and Washington, was the quickest source of revenue. Lorenzo had never met Trump, but he did know something about the businessman. He liked New York icons, and the shuttle was a well-known icon. Trump had recently purchased the Plaza Hotel in New York and was about to seal a deal for the Taj Mahal Casino Resort in Atlantic City. Donald liked to associate himself with things that spell New York, Lorenzo said in an interview. If he could have bought the Empire State Building, he would have. Over breakfasts at the Oak Room inside the Plaza Hotel and during the outing on Trump's yacht with their families, Lorenzo and Trump negotiated a sale of the shuttle fleet, airline terminals, and equipment. They settled for $365 million. Even at the time, Trump was widely believed to have overpaid. When his team added up how much it would cost to start such a carrier from scratch, they estimated around $300 million. Still, they calculated that if he got about 60% of the market share, he could easily pay off that debt. He said he wanted it, said Bruce Nobles, the industry veteran by now, hired to run the business. Was it ego? Seeing his name flying back and forth between New York and Washington and Boston with all the power brokers of the world, yes, I guess it was ego, end quote. The day of the grand opening, Trump himself flew to each of the three cities served by the airline. Passion's got a half liter of champagne and long stem roses. At Logan, one of the first passengers happened to be the renowned ballet dancer Mikhail Berezovskiy or something. It was nice, but some thought too much. You have these awful carpets at Logan. It was horrible, said Sue McGovern, who helped coordinate Trump's party at Logan. It was trying to create an image that wasn't. It was forcing things. In her mind, it was a sign of things to come. He missed a boat. We wanted convenience, not opulence. But many of the employees were thrilled. Under Eastern, they had been on strike, and Trump hired many of them to work at his airline. He also didn't cut pay or seniority. He threw us out a lifeline and kept us afloat, said Mario Catalano, a former flight attendant. I don't think you'll find any Trump employee at the airline saying anything bad about him. He saved us.
Chuck, why was it so important for Trump that he bought the Eastern Shuttle? And how did he make a change in the brand name?
Well, you know, Trump initially could not contain his excitement over the new toy that he had. This is something from day one. I have to say I want to have my name on it. He said at a press conference, just as was about to take over the shuttle, I hope my name does a lot for the shuttle, and I hope the shuttle does something for my name. Boy, that's something. Tumbling over the enthusiasm at one point, he called the shuttle a truly great transportation whatever. Boy, linguist. Let's be honest. If anyone else had started an airline, they would have never gotten that many reporters, he said later. And that was like a presidential press conference. Oh, geez. He was also asked about what it was like to fly in his own airline, looking down on his properties below. Truthfully, it was great for the Trump ego, he said. I'm not supposed to say that. He also repeatedly referred to his airline as a diamond in the sky. It all struck even some of his own employees as a bit much. He certainly was a man known for his bravado. He promised people a diamond in the sky when he had 21 of some of the oldest, worst-maintained 727 then flying. Evidence, the marketing director, he gave a press conference promising a diamond in the sky, and I say, You have to settle for a cubic zirconium to start with. On airplanes that were worth about $4 million each, Trump spent about $1 million apiece to redesign them. He wanted a T on the tail of the plane as big as possible. A giant Trump that was painted on the side. No ego there, I guess. Linda?
Chuck, it was all about Trump. The Insulite magazine featured Trump on the cover. The labels on the wet maps had to settle on them. New seat belt buckles were made of chrome. He wanted all flight attendants to have necklaces with real pearls after warnings that it cost too much, so they gave out the fake pearls. He also designed new uniforms that for the flight attendants turned out to be impractical. Flight attendant Catalano said, "We had this pretty white blouse that showed a little cleavage. You can't have that kind of a uniform. As a flight attendant, you're always bending down or picking things up. Many of us put safety pins in the back to keep them closed. They had to change the style after enough of us complained. Trump wanted the planes to feel like a private jet. The wood panels were made of bird's eye maple. The burgundy carpet was the most plush in the business, but it was too thick. The center panel had to be ripped up. The flight attendants struggled to push drink carts down the aisle. It was Trump who relied on an advisor who had helped him design his yacht. He wanted the sink to be made out of real marble. And as we mentioned earlier, after being told the fixture would be too heavy, faux pink marble was used instead. The lights installed were bright makeup lights. They weren't the dim fluorescent lights that most planes had. The sinks had an automatic sensor to turn on the tap. To some at the time, it all seemed a bit lavish. The flights only lasted for 45 minutes, and most of us were using them to commute to business meetings. Surveys of passengers found three most important things to be schedule, reliability, and the frequent flyer program. Quote, "We paid too much to refurbish the plane," said Noble, who was later fired by Trump, after which they settled a contract dispute out of court. "My argument at the time, which fell on deaf ears, was no one was going to fly on our planes because they looked better." He disagreed because his modus operandi was to make things look flashier than anyone else.
You mean Trump fired somebody? Hard to believe.
Hey, Jim Hart.
Ask the last 19 people that left the White House.
Yeah. Hey, Jimmy Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Was
I'm Trump ready.
In the management of his new toy?
Trump wasn't involved in the day-to-day management of the Trump shuttle, but he often weighed in on the decisions made around. He was very aware that it was his name on the airplanes. There were plenty of times when he would use the line, "It's the Trump shuttle, not the Hart Belt shuttle." Hart Belt said, "You are going to do things my way." Trump didn't know the airline industry, but he did know about what high-end clients might want. Few details were overlooked, from a concierge waiting at airline terminals to helicopter rides from the financial district of New York or Boston to thank you letters on Trump brand stationery signed with an auto pen that used the same blue ink felt pen that Trump had in his office. The airline also played on the power corridor during an ad campaign attempting to illustrate how it attracted a select set of passengers. One ad starred former House Speaker Tip O'Neill and former Secretary of State Alexander Haig. In television and print ads, the political odd couple appeared together, disagreeing almost everything except one thing. They like the Trump shuttle. Trump also has a drawn-out agreement with the shuttle president over a cross-promotion idea. Trump wanted the airline to something about casino.
Go ahead.
To go to the casinos in Atlantic City to redeem them. Noble said he told Trump repeatedly that the shuttle flight passengers were not typical casino goers. They were business people, and they wouldn't make a decision to purchase an airline ticket based on a casino offer. But Trump was persistent. Nobles relented and approved the distribution of casino chips. We gave out thousands to every passenger for a couple of weeks. Guess how many were redeemed? Two. Nobles said. Yes. Donald's comment was, gee, I'm surprised. And I said, well, I'm not.
Oh, my God.
Hey, George, the Trump shuttle had an accident that did end successfully, except for the reason for the malfunction. Can you tell us what happened on that accident?
Yeah, sure. Before I do that, though, at the time I was commuting to Washington. I was flying for US Air, and I used to fly the shuttle all the time. I knew all the pilots because they were all former Eastern people, and I got a bunch of those chips for the casino. I was like, what the heck are these things? You know, couldn't figure it out. But anyway. Less than 3 months after Trump took over the shuttle, he was sitting in his office one August morning. Some of the shuttle employees who also worked in Trump Tower came into the office. Quote, they came in and said, we have some good news and bad news, Trump recalled in an interview. I said, well, give me the good news. And they told him, we have a great pilot in the plane. Well, give me the bad news, Trump said. Well, the front wheels won't come down. Trump, who weeks earlier had made claims that he would send all his own planes through x-rays to make sure they were safe, turned on the TV and watched as CNN showed a Trump shuttle flight circling the air. After several attempts to jar the nose gear loose and after circling around to burn off some fuel, the pilot landed on the main wheels, the back two main landing gear, slowing the plane down as much as possible, before gently lowering the nose to the plane onto the concrete runway. It was the most beautiful landing you've ever seen, Trump said. It went all the way down the runway. By the time it landed at the end, the front just touched down very softly. Everybody got off, and nobody was injured. Sure, they were shaken up, but they were fine. Trump said he thought to himself, well, welcome to the airline industry. Bruce Nobles immediately made plans to fly to Boston, and Trump said he wanted to go also. Rather than fly his own jet, they both got on the next shuttle flight. He was kind of a nervous flyer, Noble said. He said, is it safe? I said, of course it's safe. He helped ensure a day that could have been a disastrous one instead turned focused on the heroic work of his employees, which I got to give him credit for. He turned a bad story into a good one. I really wanted to come here, Trump said, and shake hands with the maestro, Trump told all the reporters that day. I consider him a maestro, referring to the flight crew, the captain in particular. It's a great, great day as far as I'm concerned. The maestro that day was Bob Smith, the captain, said Trump had been advised not to come up so as not to draw attention to the crash, but Trump disregarded that advice. He was very happy with the crew, said Smith, who after decades in the airline industry called Trump, quote, the best boss I've ever had, unquote. Well, I guess after Lorenzo, anybody would be the best boss you ever had. I think he was very happy with the exposure he got that day. He handled it beautifully. An investigation found that years earlier, and I would add, well before Trump took over, a mechanic had used the wrong part in the gear mechanism and eventually disintegrated and locked the gear in place in the up position. One of the passengers on that flight who recalls sliding out the aircraft and into a pile of foam was Mike Murphy, a veteran Republic strategist who worked for Jeb Bush and his super PAC to try to defeat Trump. He said afterwards, all I got was a form letter and a drink coupon. About a year after he purchased the airline, Trump began openly discussing selling it. He fired Nobles and laid off 100 employees, which amounted to about 10% of the total workforce. Trump had also explored having two pilots fly the 727, but Nobles said he was insistent that anything less than three was unsafe. Not only was it unsafe, you had to have three on the 727, according to the FAA. Free coffee was no longer served in the terminals, and the concierge service was suspended. Over an 18-month period, Trump couldn't turn a profit. The shuttle had lost $128 million. But Trump did have one thing in his favor, leverage over his creditors. In September of 1990, he missed a $1.1 million interest payment and asked the bank to defer future payments. One banker told me, he would take down the bank. He owes so much money, Noble said. We can't afford him to fail. In late 1991, about 2.5 years after Trump had purchased the airline, he gave up control of his prize in order to get out from under the pile of debt. As part of the deal, Trump was no longer responsible for some $245 million, that's million dollars, in loans left on the shuttle airline. In addition, out of the $135 million that Trump had personally guaranteed, at least $100 million was forgiven, according to news reports at the time. Soon after, my airline that I was working for at the time, U.S. Airways, began operating the flights, quickly stripping Trump's name off everything. U.S. Airways bought the shuttle from the bank in full in 1997 when it was valued at $285 million. At the end of the day, Trump maintains he did not lose any money in the venture. The only lesson he learned, he said, was that he knew when to walk away. Quote, I got out at a good time, Trump said in a recent Globe interview. I walked away saying, boy, am I smart. It's good to get great financing. I felt successful. The market had crashed. I didn't lose anything. Therefore, it was a good thing. And that's the end of the Trump story with the show.
You know, thanks so much to all of you guys. You did a great show. You know, I used to, I was thinking about having a future show based on humor, but I think this show did a good job, Dorothy. So let's scratch humor as one of our future broadcasts, because this has been really a funny presentation. Now I know who the leader of the Keystone Cops are.
Yeah.
Well, it was so
but let's.
It,
we're open now, Dorothy.
Million.
We've got a couple of folks that want to talk about. I've got. Before Don comes in here, I want to ask. I think we have Jerry Frost on the air tonight, and he used to be a Trump pilot, just as Jim Holder flew the Trump shuttle. I mean, not the Trump shuttle, but the Eastern shuttle. Excuse me. And I also flew the Eastern shuttle, the correction made. And Jerry, are you with us tonight?
He probably is. I'll just have to open his microphone.
And now you're on the air, Jerry. So try again.
Can you hear me, Neil?
I can hear you now. Yes, I can.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, this is really quite a treat tonight, reminiscing about the shuttle. I started back in probably about August or September of 1963, flying the Constellations, and that was my first base in with Eastern, coming from Miami training up to New York. But what an experience! I flew it for about a year, and I remember those wonderful landings in LaGuardia, where you have to come over Brooklyn and then you have to come around Shea Stadium and make that real tight turn to go into runway 31. And that's where you really get some experience, I'll tell you, in that big four engine. you know, back then with the Constellation, it wasn't like power steering with all the jets and everything. You really had to have some muscle turning that thing, and anybody that flew it will confirm it. But had wonderful experiences back then in 1963, 1964, and then I went over to Washington and on the DC-7s. But I wanted to mention, Neil, about REPA's convention coming up this September, and we've got a real good convention this year. It's going to be in Charleston. We've got a fantastic comedian that we're going to actually fly in from Atlanta that's going to Charleston, a guy by the name of Jim Gossett. Anybody that listens to the Kim Peterson radio show here in Atlanta will certainly know Jim Gossett. So I just hope everybody can come to our convention. It may, for all practical purposes, be our last one as we know it. And so we want to go out with a big bang. But, I remember with the shuttle, I've flown Richard Nixon, the Kennedys, Robert, Ted Kennedy. I remember Ethel Kennedy.
Wow.
And a whole bunch of other politicians, you know, going between Washington and New York. So that's my reminiscence of back in those good old days.
You know, Jerry, you brought up something that a lot of folks that did fly the shuttle met a lot of personalities, politicians, celebrities, and so forth on their flights. I'll never forget when I flew the shuttle, I was on temporary duty. I bid that so I could make a little extra money, and unfortunately I arrived during the blizzard of 1978, but I still managed to fly 3 months there, and one of the flight attendants told me that she had been flying it for years and years, started out on the Connie, and I asked her about her experiences flying the shuttle, because I knew nothing about it, being based in Atlanta, flying line trips, you know, down to the Caribbean and out to L.A. and Seattle and so forth. But she did tell me that she remembered, one of the things that she remembered that really upset her was a politician named Lyndon Baines Johnson. And when he was running, or vice president, I forgot which one at the time, but it wasn't vice president because now he had his own airplane. But it was prior to that. And he marched out on the shuttle and situated himself so he could put his cowboy boots up on the forward firewall there, right in front of the seat, that he could stretch himself out. I guess he was a tall gentleman. I'd never seen him personally. But and she would ask him to take his feet down, and of course he didn't do that. He just left them up there. So that was an interesting thing that she was talking about. Other things that I didn't fly that long enough to recognize any politician or celebrity and so forth, but I'm sure those flight attendants had their hands full back there with personalities that were egos almost as big as Trump's.
Well, Neil, I got a good shuttle story for you. I was flying from Boston back to LaGuardia. And at the time, you know, I was a co-pilot, it was my leg, and we came around and did the approach that Jerry was talking about, the expressway approach, and went ahead and landed on 3-1. And it was one of those nights where I guess I got lucky, and it was a real, you know, it was a good landing. So the captain said, well, why don't you go stand by the door and take credit for that? So I said, sure, why not? So I went back to the door, and who's coming off the airplane at the moment is Elizabeth Taylor. So she said, well, were you my pilot on this leg? I said, or on this flight? I said, yes. She goes, well, let me give you a kiss. Well, she did. I tell you what, I didn't wash my face for about 3 days after that.
I want to be in the movie.
Captain must have been very upset he gave you the permission to do that.
When I told him, he didn't believe me at first. I said, well, go into the terminal and you could see for yourself. And he did. And sure enough, he said, oh, my God, I can't believe it.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. Don, I'm going to let you finish up, and then we'll talk some more because this is fun. This really is fun. Don, would you finish up the rest of it?
Yeah, you know, Neil, I've got a question here for our guest and our host. Does anyone know how much it cost in the 70s between New York and Washington on the shuttle? Have any idea what those tickets were?
Yeah, it was when I first started in 71, it was flying the shuttle. I think it was $29 to Washington. And nobody,
yeah, you're right. You got that right. $29.64. And they had a surge security charge of 59 cents.
Well, I don't know if there's any security because we didn't even go out of the terminal when it was busy. We went right through the hangar onto the airplane.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, when the shuttle started, it was $12.
That's right, Shay. I was going to mention that. I'm glad you did. $12, right, Shay?
Yeah,
it was in 1963, I guess it was. Washington to Boston, the fare was $10.95, and it was later on reduced to even numbers. It soon dropped a few cents. $12 and $14.
Yeah.
And that included 10% federal tax. Well, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was
well,
1965. It was when I flew it 1 month on the Electra, an engineer, it was something like $13. That was 65.
Mm-hmm. So Floyd Hall boosted the price slightly.
Right. Yeah.
When it came in.
Well, much of the material we used tonight was from an article written by Kelsey Gores in the Cheat Sheet, and that was of March the 3rd of this year. We did supplement the material that we used tonight with our own recollections, and it was a fun show. I really enjoyed that. I want to open up all the microphones, I mean the telephones, and we've got a bunch of callers. Our board is completely filled with probably folks that did fly the shuttle. And so I'm going to open up all the microphones, and if anyone would like to make a comment about our program tonight or the air shuttle, we'd like to hear from you.
I wonder what the terminal activity was like.
Hang on a second, a minute, Don. I think I hear somebody talking. Just a minute, Don.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, Neil, this is Eston. I just walked in here.
Hey, Eston.
I flew the shuttle quite a bit. I started out flying captain in Washington in 1967 and was checked out on the Constellation. And, of course, that's the only thing I could hold. Well, that's all there was, a few charters. But anyway, I had some famous guests on. I had Lady Bird on once, but I didn't want to take a kiss from her like you did, Neil.
Wasn't me. It was George.
That was Elizabeth Taylor, not Lady Bird.
Yeah. There's a little difference.
One shuttle flight I do remember quite well is a Friday evening, and it's quite busy then, and I taxied out from the gate going to LaGuardia to Washington, and there was 15 airplanes ahead of me. Well, I was about number two or three to go, and the flight attendant came up and said, "Hey, there's two guys back here. They're lawyers, and they got on this. They want to go to Boston, not Washington." I said, "Well, did you make any announcements before we taxied?" She said, "I made three announcements that this is the Washington shuttle, and if you want to go to Boston, you've got to get off now." But anyway, these two guys were Jewish lawyers, and they didn't get the word. Well, they were demanding that I take the airplane back to the gate, and they came up and started beating on the door. And I went to the door and very nicely told them that this was the Washington shuttle and we could not go back. We'd waited too long getting out here, and it cost us a lot more time. I said, "We'll get you to Boston on a flight later." And anyway, I shut the door in their face. We took off. Well, anyway, the flight attendant brought a note up a little bit later before we got to Washington, and it was in a real official envelope, Attorney General of the United States. I opened it up, and it was a letter that said, "Captain, I like the way you handled that. If those guys give you any problems," and they had threatened me they were going to sue Eastern and everything when I was talking to them at the door. And they said, "If you have any trouble with them, please give me a call. Robert F. Kennedy." Was the signature.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I also flew the shuttle with the Airbus. My first Airbus flying was 1980. And it was 3 round trips a day, LaGuardia to Boston. I sure learned how to land the thing real quick that way. Anyway, I'll get off here. There's a lot of other people.
Well, a lot of other people want to talk. Now's your chance, please.
Well, can you hear me from Mobile?
Sure can hear you from Mobile. That's where my daughter is, too.
This is Shay Bradley, and I just want to say how proud I am of Captain Neil Holland, my dad, for being inducted into the Hall of Fame. No one can be more deserving than you. You know, you are quite the role model, the father, and the pilot. Extraordinaire. And congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you, darling. And I hope you'll be on our Eastern Brat show. Thank you so much.
Neil's daughter.
Hey, Neil. Neil?
Yes, sir.
Neil, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, listen, I wanted to tell you, we had our REPA board meeting last Saturday, and it was absolutely unanimous that you were going to be our Hall of Fame recipient for 2018. And I want to take this opportunity to congratulate you, and we're looking forward to seeing you there in Charleston to accept the award.
Well, Jerry, and to the board, Jim, you're on it also. I deeply appreciate your thoughts, and I'm not worthy of that, but I'll certainly accept it. And REPA has meant so much to me over the years. As well as the Eastern Airlines that we talk about every night. And I want to say, Dorothy, I'm going to take this part, but I want to say thank you also to the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. And you can relay this, as Dorothy has written a letter, thanking you guys for sponsoring once again the EAL radio show. And we're so appreciative of that. Because don't know how long we could stay on the air without support like REPA. And for those folks with REPA, if you'll relay that to the president, Bud Robbins, I believe, is the president this year. Is that right, Jerry?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's the president.
Well,
that's correct, Neil.
Thank you so much. And it means so much to me. And darling, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it, Shay.
How about a round of applause for Captain Neil? Everyone.
Well, Dorothy, I want to let you finish up with the announcements and what's going on the website and what's planned for the future.
Well, you've already thanked the sponsorship, REPA, and we thank them immensely. I wanted to mention also that they have the 2018 convention in Charleston, South Carolina, and the information is up on the website, repaonline.com, REPA News, so be sure to go there and keep an eye out for when the forms and the rest of the information will be up there. The dates of that are September 4th to September 7th. Also, the chapter of the Silver Liners started in Jacksonville, Florida, And Neil sent out a notice to them inviting them to join him in Pontevedra at the studio to perhaps give a program with them, and they could share their memories and stories. So they're invited to do that, and please give us an email at host@ealradioshow.com and let us know whenever you would like to join them. The Atlanta EAL Clip Wings flight attendants also, Kathy Suttles, invite you to their event reunion Sunday brunch on April 29th at 11 a.m., and that's to be held at the Cross Creek Cafe at 1221 Cross Creek Parkway in Atlanta, Georgia, and that information is up on the website as well. It's $30 for cash bar, mail checks by April 15th. The Silver Liners Convention, too, is being held at the Wyndham Grand in Jupiter at the Harborside, and that's going to be May 15th to May 18th. We also want to remind everyone, as you did, Neil, that the Eastern Bright program is coming up on April 23rd, so anyone that would like to join us, please send in your name so that we have it recorded and would love to have as many as we can. Just want to make note that the website has the Facebook comments on the information about Dynamic and Eastern Airlines. There are pros and there are cons, so be sure to check our website for that, as well as a new tab that I've created, which now has the Eastern, Swift, and Dynamic names on it to check there for the rest of the news that we had given tonight. The Eastern history of the Trump Shuttle and the Eastern Shuttle are also up in our Eastern history. So if anybody wants to go back and read any of the information which she shared with you tonight, it's on our website. You can do that also. We have 986 members, and we're asking that you please continue to encourage your friends to join us. We'd love to have them. And we just can't wait for our numbers to increase until we get 1,000. So, again, congratulations to you, Neil. We're very, very proud of you, and you really are deserving of this gracious award. Thanks to Reba for doing so.
Yeah.
We love you, Eastern. Back to you, Neil.
Thank you so much. All of you guys did a great job, and we really enjoyed the show tonight. And I'm just going to say right now, Eastern Flight 357, you're cleared to land.
Great landing, Captain Steve. Be sure to tune in again next Monday at 7 p.m. when Eastern Flight 358, taxiing from the gate with another adventure. The topic at that time, ERM, order in the cockpit. That's our show for tonight. We thank all participating in tonight's broadcast, and especially our listeners. With us, we take a line from Lake Wobegon stories, where all the Eastern women are unequaled, all the Eastern men are good-looking, and all the Eastern children and Eastern grandchildren are way above average. Until then, we say to everyone in Eastern land, good night, Eastern family. We love you, Eastern.
Good night,
good night
Eastern.
Eastern.
We love you, Eastern.
Love you, Eastern. Good night.
Good show, Neil. Good show.
Great show, Neil. We enjoyed it immensely. Lots of fun.
Great. You guys delivered a wonderful show. You really did. And thank you so much, all of you. Yeah, I'm tired, too. Okay, here's our theme song. Good night.
Good night. Until we meet again. Adios. Au revoir. I'll be the same till then. good night.